Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on episode 270 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Polestar 2 Performance Package, the Rivian R1S, driving the all-new BMW 7 Series, including the i7, Honda's solid-state batteries, Mini teaches you how to drive a stick, and a bunch of listener questions. All that and more coming up next. This is episode 270 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam McWall-Sammage from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from The Verge.
The Verge this week. So what have you been up to, Robbie, since we last spoke a couple of weeks ago?
I've been around the world. I've been a lot of places. But when I finally came home this week, I got to drive the R1S, the Rivian SUV. The R1T is so nice. And the R1S, they just continue to... create really nice cars. I mean, it's not that difficult when you only have two of them, mm-hmm. and they're essentially kind of the same. The R1S is 16 inches shorter than the R1T, so it's a bit more agile. But yeah, I had it for the week.
Is the wheelbase shorter as well, or is it just
the wheelbase is shorter as well. I can't. Okay. I don't remember that number.
it's all right.
it's shorter. It does have a third row. Once I got into it, it's fine for like sort of driving around town, but just getting in and out of it as a tall person is just, I felt like I was going to snap one of my legs off. Again, third rows, unless you're, a minivan or a navigator, for the most part, it's definitely for children or for very short jaunts with adults. but yeah, it drives well, it's still quick. They gave me the first edition, which is sold out. But it had the quad motor, motor at each wheel. It had the large battery pack, which is 135,
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. 135 kilowatts. They've been doing updates to the, over the air updates, and now it'll DC fast charge at up to 220 kilowatts from a 450 volt architecture. So yeah, no, and it supports 500 amp chargers, so when those come online, you'll be ready to rock. It's definitely a vehicle that gets better over time, if they're still expensive. This one starts at $78,000, so
wow. and they're not going to get any cheaper when they finally bring out the two motor version.
Yeah, that's the two motor version. The one I was driving, the starting price was okay. So the Adventure, so to use the Adventure is the one that you can get right now with a quad motor, and the large battery pack is $95,500. So it's not an inexpensive vehicle. If you get the $78,000 one, I think you'll be fine. I don't think you need all four motors. You can get dual motors and be just as happy.
Yeah, I mean, you're still going to have like 600 horsepower. I think.
Yeah, you don't need. At some point, like it's just, what am I doing with all this horsepower in an SUV? Because you can't, are you on the track? Are you doing quarter mile runs all the time? no, you're just cruising around town, and you can take it off road. What is really
well,
cool
you do
is,
need to get to the other side of the intersection before everybody else. So
that's true, but you can still do that with like 600 horsepower. I mean, I could do that with my little my Kona because that initial hit, initial torque is there, and then you sort of diminishing returns after you keep going in the Kona. It's just the more powerful vehicles just keep accelerating for forever. But these are adventure vehicles. These are very much a lifestyle. I think I've called them the Patagonia of vehicles. They're outdoorsy, but expensive. And They have added a few new features, which is some of the stuff I tested. They had a pet mode, which they added, which is something I think every EV, everybody, if you're making an EV, you should have some sort of pet mode. You should just steal that feature from Tesla. Because it's, sometimes I'll be driving around, and I'm like, oh, I need to run into a store. But I definitely do, even if it's for like a minute or two. Because it gets because I know when, you know, whenever I have to do videos in cars, we had to turn the air conditioning off so I can do voiceover. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, we do a few takes and we got to, you know, turn the air conditioning back on because you're just like sweating. And dogs don't sweat like people, you know, they have to pant. and so, yeah, so I they have a pet mode. I did a video of the car and I didn't get a video, but if you, once you lock the car, like the center display pops up and says, you know, my pooch is safe or my animal's safe and they're enjoying air conditioning and, I don't know, Black Sabbath, whatever your dog, cat, or potbelly pig enjoys when they're sitting in your car, whatever their musical preferences are. So that was cool. They also have a whole suite of camping features now. They have features so that you can have the car on but without the external lights on, so you're not, like, hassling the other campers. Like, if you want to, if you're overlanding or if you're sleeping mm-hmm. in the car. This is especially if you have, like, kids. Sometimes people will go camping. They'll put the kids in the car to sleep because, you know, it's warmer. They also have, so you can turn off the display. They have energy usage. You can optimize how you're using the energy. And they have this one really cool feature. It's called, like, an auto leveling. And so let's say you park on a hill or a weird surface, which, you know, when you go camping, it's not like you're going to, like, park on a nice asphalt slab right. all the time. You hit the little auto leveling, and you just sit in the car and wait, and it takes a few minutes. It's not quick.
I noticed that when I drove the R1T as well. If you put it into off-road mode and you want to put it up to maximum ground clearance, it takes several minutes for those air springs to pump up and get you to maximum height.
Yeah, that air compressor really, really has to work to get it because it's nearly 7,000. Well, the R1S is nearly 7,000 pounds. So I don't know what the R1. I'm sorry, around the same.
The truck is about 73.
Yeah, so they're not light.
Yeah.
So it takes a little bit. So yeah, so you can auto level it, which is great for overlanding because, you know, you're sleeping essentially on top of your car. And if you're at an angle, like you're just rolling out of the tent or whatever.
So that was
really nice. And it's, again, if you want to sleep in the car, if you or your kids or whatever, or you're just driving cross country, which I've done that a few times, where we just pull over and sleep in the car, and then get back on the road in a few hours. So yeah, that was really cool, and it works really well. I put the little level, from your iPhone in there, and I just put it on the tailgate. And it's funny because you're like, oh, this is a 5% or 5 degrees of angle, and you don't think that's a lot, but then you look at the car and you're like, oh, that is a lot. And then you did it, and we got to, like, in my driveway, which is about 3.5-4 degrees of angle, I got to zero, and then out in the wilderness it got to like -1, which was, you know, once that's good. So for 4 degrees, especially we purposely found like a giant bump in order to put like the front left tire on. And so if you looked at the tires, mm-hmm. like they were all over the place. It looked really funny because the car is level. You take photos and the car is level, but you look at the wheels and the wheel, like one's higher than the other by like a few inches. And it's a cool feature for people who want to sleep or, you know, maybe you're, I don't know, serving hot drinks in the car when you don't want to spill them. You have very fine china.
Yeah.
It drives well. Their Driver Plus ADAS system has gotten better. Adaptive cruise control is super chill. It's not very aggressive at all, which I'm always a fan of. The lane keeping assist, it still needs some tweaking. For the most part, it works fine. Super tight, you know, corners, turns on the freeway. It's sometimes you need to sort of wrangle it away from the thing, but it's definitely not nearly as difficult to take control as, say, like a Tesla, where you're essentially like fighting with the car to get control back. I've said this again, and I'll just keep saying it. Lucid and Rivian, both of their first vehicles are great. They both have these really great vehicles, but they both decided to build cars at the worst possible time because of everything that's going on. But yeah, the R1S, I look forward to, any future vehicles, and hopefully, we can get some less expensive vehicles from them in the future. I know 78,000 is still further, it's still a lot of money.
Well, they are working on the R2 series. They've said that, which will be less expensive. Yeah. And I think, the class of vehicles they're competing against right now, are the likes of Range Rover, the high end Jeeps, this is probably, the R1S competing with, loaded, Grand Cherokee, Jeep Grand Cherokee, 4xE, things like that.
Which are almost the same price.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and you look at the truck market and people are paying like 70, 80, 100 and something thousand dollars for just a regular F-150 Platinum or King Ranch that whole market is really expensive. But I like the idea of essentially, everyone's doing this where they're making EVs out of the top end of their line because they can afford to sort of take they can add the extra money there because people who are willing to spend or able to spend $100,000 on a car, a few thousand dollars doesn't really matter to them. And hopefully this sort of trickles back down to the $35,000 Model S3 that we were supposed to get. That was the dream. They're supposed to get the cheap.
It was briefly sort of kind of available.
It was like an off menu. It was like double animal style.
Yeah,
like
you'd have to actually call Tesla. You couldn't order it online. You actually had to call Tesla and say, "I want a $35,000 Model 3." And I didn't actually experience this, but my guess is it was probably kind of like the experience of, ordering cable service, or TV service. They're constantly trying to upsell you. It's like, you can get this one for 35, but we really think you'll be a lot happier with this, standard range plus or the long range version, for 45 or 50 or $55,000. And before you know it, nobody's buying the $35,000 version. And then Tesla says, well, we discontinued that one because nobody was buying it.
Well, they hit it. Well, I'm going to look and see what potential purchase price. Yeah, the starting price of a Model 3 now is $46,000.
Yeah.
It's 47, really. It's $46,990. So, yeah, we didn't get to...
And that is with... a CATL lithium iron phosphate battery. So it's a Chinese made battery. Nothing wrong with that. It's a very good battery. That's CATL good makes really good stuff. But, if you were counting on come January, the new version of the clean vehicle tax credits to be able to maybe get $7,500 off of a Model 3 again.
Nope,
because that Chinese battery disqualifies it. And so actually none of the Model 3s, at least as currently available, will qualify because that's the only one that is under 55,000. The others are all over 55,000, so they're not they don't qualify. The only Teslas that might qualify for the clean vehicle credit are the entry-level versions of the Model Y.
The Model Y is really expensive.
They start at, I think their current starting price is somewhere in the $67,000 range.
Because it's the SUV, I forget the whole, it's $66,000, yeah.
And they don't currently offer a standard range version of the Model Y. It's only available as the extended range and the performance.
Yeah.
I can see at some point, that they will add that. They do offer a standard range version with that same CATL battery in other markets. They just don't offer it in North America.
Yeah.
Again, probably because probably not a whole lot of demand for it.
Yeah, they got to put that list out of who gets what, because they got to get a little bit of something. I don't even know anymore.
As far as the credits go?
Yeah, I'm so confused. I'm still confused by the whole thing. The IRS has figured out.
Yeah, well, that's the problem is the IRS has to issue the final accounting rules for how they account for the content value in the batteries. And that's supposed to be published by December. You know, once they've done that, then the automakers can go through and add up their numbers and see, okay, what percentage of my content, have I hit 40% content, and then I can qualify for some of these credits. We probably won't know until, the first of the year, early January, which vehicles actually qualify.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see how people sort of adjust their production and their order and their supply chain in order to we're right on the cusp.
Yeah.
We're more likely to sell more cars if we can get it, to this thing. So let's order this from here and let's change this to that.
One detail that will be interesting to watch when the IRS issues the rules is how they account for that, that MSRP threshold, because a few years back in Canada, they did a similar thing where they put a price cap, a $45,000 price cap, for the base price in order to qualify for tax credits there. And what Tesla did, that none of their cars were below $45,000 at that point. They started offering a version of the Model 3 for $44,999, $1 below the threshold. But they software locked the battery, so you only had 93 miles of range.
And then you had to pay.
And then you could pay for an OTA software update after you bought the car that would unlock the rest of the battery. And the question is, will the IRS do anything to prevent that sort of gaming of the system? Will they say that in order to qualify, the entire battery capacity has to be available at that price point?
Yeah. And then you got to look at destination. Is it include destination?
My guess is it won't.
So what if everyone's destination fees go up $3,000?
I mean, that's a possibility. I think Tesla's destination fees are already $2,000.
So much money.
But we'll keep revisiting this, as the rules come out later in the year and early in the new year. For now, we don't really know anything.
Yeah.
But none of Rivian's vehicles actually qualify right now.
Yeah, they're just all too expensive.
Yeah, because you have to be below $80,000 for a truck or an SUV, and they don't actually offer that two-motor version yet. So until that happens, they won't qualify. And the same is true for Lucid and a lot of other cars that don't qualify.
Yeah, I think that on the top end, I don't think they really care.
Yeah.
I think they're like, oh, it'd be nice, but no one cares, Again, if you're spending $100,000 on a car, saving a few thousand bucks is
it's if when you're at that price point, you're going to be less price sensitive than somebody who's looking for a $30,000 car.
People like me.
Yeah. All right. Anything else on the Rivian R1S?
No, I can't think of anything.
Okay. Do they also have the does the R1S have the built-in air compressor, so you can when you go on off road you can air down your tires and then pump them back up again?
It does have the air compressor. It has outlets in the back. It has a little speaker underneath the center.
The Bluetooth speaker you can pull out from under the console.
You can pull out and have a DJ dance party out in the middle of the woods. It has all these the little weird Rivian amenities that, people who want to go out and do weird things outdoors can do. So, it has all the cool little things that you can do while you're out there. And I had all terrain tires on it. So that really just destroyed the range. Cause it's 316. And then you throw it was on the 20-inch wheels, which are oh, that's cool. Cause they have 21s, 20. But it had the all-terrain tires, and that's, I think it was 40 miles or 60 miles of range. And they say on the site, they're like, hey, you put these tires on, you're really going to mess up your range.
No.
And then when I did my range run, it ended up being the one day it's rained in Northern California, and there was these crazy winds. So on the way out, it was fine, but on the way back, it was just this insane headwind. Suddenly it got super windy, and I was like, oh, man.
Hey, so, yeah. That's the way it goes.
Yeah, so it wasn't really much of a level playing field. So I didn't actually like put out a number of what it was, just because it was so bad. Because you know,
yeah.
And, not... you know, if I did all that and you know if I took a Jeep out and it had regular road tires and then I swapped it over to all terrains and then I drove in the rain and I did it, yeah, because rain creates surface tension. It creates, you know, it's yeah, all that like destroys your efficiency of your car regardless of what the powertrain is. So
yeah. While we're talking about Rivian, one other thing that came up since the last time we talked was that Rivian announced that they were discontinuing availability of both the camp kitchen and the power tonneau cover on the R1T because of the tonneau cover was because of some reliability issues. A lot of people were complaining because it's actually a surprisingly complex mechanism that they have for that power tonneau. And I'll, in the show notes, I'll include a link to the Monroe Live video showing the teardown they did of that and explaining how the thing works. But basically you've got a bunch of slats that interlock with each other. And as the tonneau opens up, they drop into a cavity on top of each other. So it doesn't like roll up or anything or fold up. The slats just drop down into a cavity and stack up and then come, you know, and as you open it back up, you know, there's springs underneath that push the slats back up. It's a bizarre mechanism, but because of the way they've got it set up, sometimes one of the slats can get skewed sideways and then the whole thing jams up.
Skew, and it's like,
yep, and it goes nowhere. That happened like went back when we still had our VW Jetta Sport Wagon with the cover for the sunroof.
Yeah,
for the panoramic sunroof. I'll include this video so you can see that. And then for the camp kitchen, apparently they're doing some redesign of it to improve it. So
it's $5,000. You can just buy a kit.
Yeah, I mean,
my whole thing was like you're losing half of the gear tunnel.
Yeah.
You can buy a small like Coleman camp kitchen that'll take up less space.
Well, or I mean, the camp kitchen had two inductive burners in there. You can buy an inductive hot plate off of Amazon for $60. Because that's what we did before we bought our new stove, an inductive stove. We wanted to see what cooking with an inductive stove was going to be look like. So I went on Amazon and I got an inductive hot plate for $60 just to try it out, you know, see how fast it boiled water, see if our pots actually work with it. And then, you know, we liked that. And then I ordered a full-blown stove. And so you can buy a, you know, two of these for, you know, a little over $100 and, you know, have a wash tub to, you know, wash your dishes and stuff. Yeah. You know, so you don't actually need the full camp kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was really cool. I've seen it.
Yeah.
It's super cool looking and it's, but I'm just like, oh, the cheap person in me is like, you're losing space and And you can also put, like, you don't have to be standing by your truck in order to cook. You can put it over on the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're like, hold on, the table's here, but the camp kitchen's over here, so we got to do everything over here, and then move it to the table as opposed to, like, we're all working at the table, and you move everything around. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's a cool idea, but yeah.
Kind of like the tank turns, you know, cool idea, maybe not so actually useful.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. I, in between a couple of trips, was driving the Polestar 2 again for the second time in a couple of months. But this time it was the 2023 model with the performance package, which means that, you know, since this is a Polestar, like when on a lot of Volvo models, you can get a trim level that's called Polestar Engineered that has Ohlins dampers on there, a little more performance, Brembo brakes, six piston Brembo brakes on the front, and you know, nice bright yellow seat belts that, you know, that look really cool. That tells you, you know, you're special. but you know, you can't really do a Polestar engineered Polestar.
Volvo engineered Polestar.
Yeah. So they just call it the performance package, but it's effectively the same type of thing that would be Polestar engineered on any Volvo model. And so the performance package bumps up the power output of the dual motor Polestar 2 from 408 horsepower, 487 foot-pounds of torque, to 476 horsepower and 502 pounds-feet of torque. There's not actually any hardware change associated with that, but it's all software. So owners of existing dual-motor Polestar 2s will actually be able to buy a software update that gets you at least that performance upgrade. It won't include the Ohlins dampers or the bigger brakes or any of that, and they haven't announced pricing yet for that. But the performance pack is priced at $5,500, and it also gets an improvement in range along with everything else. So it bumps up the EPA range number to 260 miles, which is nice little bump on there. It also includes a heat pump, as part of the plus pack, actually, not the performance pack, but the plus pack. It does feel marginally quicker. It's not a huge improvement in performance. I think it drops from 0-60 from about 4.5 to, just over 4 seconds. But it's still, it's nice and quick, rides, at least in the default settings for the Ohlins dampers, is slightly stiffer than the standard one. And the Ohlins dampers are adjustable, but they're not like adaptive dampers that self-adjust as you're driving down the road. You can go in and manually twist and adjust the dampers and change the damping rates a little bit. So if you want it a little bit softer or a little bit stiffer, if you live somewhere where the roads are nice and smooth, you can make it a little stiffer, get a little better handling. Although, the Polestar 2, even in its default mode, has pretty good handling. It's pretty good body control, nice and stable. And it's a lot of fun to drive. Really, the only thing that I found slightly disappointing, and I haven't gotten a response from Polestar on this, is, the Polestar has an Android automotive-based infotainment system. As do the latest Volvos, so in the App Store, in the Google Play Store, in there, I was setting it up when it arrived. I went looking for Pocket Casts, which is my podcast playing app of choice, which I use on my other devices, and it's nice because I can sync up. If I'm listening on my phone, I get in the car. It automatically syncs everything up. So it's playing, it's got the same playlist. It's got the same, it syncs up wherever the position was on the last thing I was listening to and brings that up by default. The Pocket Casts app seems to be missing from the App Store now. It was there the last time I had a Polestar 2 a couple months ago. It wasn't there in the current one. I actually have a Volvo XC60 in the driveway right now as well. That has the Android automotive system. It does have Pocket Cast still on it. It shows it in the Play Store. So not sure what's going on. I did a little Googling around, and some other Polestar owners were complaining that recently the Pocket Cast app disappeared. So maybe it's a glitch somewhere, with an update. Who knows? Because in order to show up in the Play Store in vehicles, app developers do have to, there's only certain types of apps that are allowed. And I think they probably have to have certain settings. So it's maybe the most recent update. They forgot to, flip the switch on some setting when they were building the app.
They're like, yeah, send it off.
So it doesn't show up in the apps in the Play Store. We'll see if that changes going forward. But just something to be aware of.
Is Brony Radio still available in the Google App Store?
I have not looked recently. I'm pretty sure it's not in the Play Store in vehicles in Android Automotive.
It was. It was in the Play Store. That's the only reason I know what it is.
Oh, okay.
I feel stupid that I didn't download it and try it out. I was like, do I really want this on my history? I want this downloading itself onto all my Android devices. So go out there, you guys see, and then listen and see what Brony Radio is all about. I guess it's just My Little Pony songs.
I will go and check after we're done recording.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Sorry to throw you off, but I really, that's an important journalism.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's, you know, people need to know if the Brony radio is going to be available in the car. You know, I mean, hey, whatever, you know, to each their own. So the base price for the 2023 Polestar 2 dual motor, is $51,900. The one I was driving had the midnight paint, which added $1,250, the pilot pack, and the plus pack and the performance pack, at $5,500. Destination charge, you want to take a guess?
$1,300.
Very close. $14,000.
Oh, yeah.
Grand total came to $67,650. So, you know, if you're looking for a compactish, sedanish, you know, with a lift gate, you know, but slightly taller, you know, crossoverish ride height, EV, you know, the Polestar 2 is, you know, still a great choice. I still really like it, aside from the high belt line, which I'm not crazy about.
And you're not a fan of the high belt line.
Yeah.
It works fine for me. I don't know. I like that. I really, yeah, those Polestars are really nice. Even
with I'm really looking forward to checking out the Polestar 3, which is coming next year. They recently revealed it, and you know, that's going to be an interesting one. And then next week, as we're recording this, November 9th, Volvo is going to take the wraps off the EX90, which is also sharing its platform with the Polestar 3.
Yeah, that'll be. It's the Volvo Polestar. They're going all in. Good for them. It's funny because if you go to Volvo's headquarters in Gothenburg, Sweden, there's just a box. It's the Polestar box. It's a cube or a box or a square. It says Polestar. It's a square inside the thing for like their little Horky headquarters. I don't know. It's just
inside the building or next to the building?
No, next to the building. There's just like another building that's like a square. It's like it looks like someone just stuck a box.
So they took the box that the Volvos used to be shipped in.
And then they just put a Polestar. Yeah, it's a big square. It looks like a giant. It's like a Rubik's cube. They should put little different colors around each side so it looks like a Rubik's cube. It's like a perfect square. I don't know. It just sort of sticks out a little bit, and it's kind of cool, but yeah.
All right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. Continuing on, earlier this week, I was in Palm Springs, more specifically Rancho Mirage, for a couple of days, driving some new BMWs. They had the global media launch for the new, all-new 2023 7 Series, as well as the refreshed X7, and then they had Test Fest, where they had a whole bunch of other stuff available to drive, including the new X1 and the iX and the i4. And for those that ride two-wheelers, they had a bunch of bikes as well. So got to spend Monday all day driving two different 7 Series, the 760i and the i7. The i7 is the battery electric version. For the U.S. market, BMW is going to be offering three powertrain options for the new 7 Series. The base 740i will be a 3-liter twin-turbo inline six. The 760i will have a twin-turbo 4.4-liter V8. And then the dual-motor all-electric i7 is the top model. The two gas engines, the six-cylinder and the V8, are both mild hybrids, and it's a new mild hybrid system. Previously, BMW's 48-volt mild hybrids used a belted starter generator system that could do some brake energy recovery providing a little bit of torque boost to the engine. Now they've switched to a configuration where the electric motor is packaged in the transmission between the engine and the torque converter. And then there's a small lithium-ion battery in the back. That gives you more advanced auto stop-start capability where it can stay shut off for several minutes, when you're sitting idle, provide some additional torque boost. It'll give up to 200 Newton meters of torque boost and about, 9 kilowatts, so about 13, 14 horsepower to whatever the engine's doing. They didn't have the six-cylinder there to drive. They only had the 760s and the i7.
Sorry.
But both of them, both the 760 and the i7, have 563 horsepower. Obviously, produce that 563 horsepower in very different ways. One does it using a significant amount of petroleum. The other does it from a plug. Chubba Chetta he's the former longtime editor in chief of Car and Driver, were driving together on Monday. And one of the things we noticed with this thing, well, first off, the design. What do you think of the design of the new 7?
I think I said this before, like BMW is just like, you know what, we're going to do or we're going to do. And if you don't like it, too bad.
Pretty much, yeah.
You still have the huge grill. And I talk to people, like car people and just regular people, and they're like, the grill. And I'm like, I know. I don't make BMWs, but I understand what you're doing. And they're like, man, that grill. But I think what's going to happen with the 7 Series, the same thing that happened with the 4 and the i4, is that you just sort of get used to it.
You learn to walk up from behind.
Yeah, you learn to love it. Like the i, like now or, at this point in the i4, tolerated. I'm like, yeah, at the i4, I'm like, you know what? It's fine.
Yeah.
that's where I'm at with the i4 now and the 4 Series. I think it's just going to be the same thing with the 7 Series, where you're like it's so, it doesn't, 20% smaller, 10%, even 10%, because now it feels like it's sort of encroaching onto the hood, because like the way it's sort of like creeping over at an angle at the top, it's like,
well,
they set the design language like 4 years ago, and they're not backing down. They're like, no, in fact, we're gonna make it bigger.
Well, for what it's worth, on the new 7 versus the last 7, because they did a refresh, mid-cycle refresh on the last 7 about 2-3 years ago when they went to a larger grill. And looking at them side by side, the new one, the grill is actually the same, almost exactly the same size. But it actually looks slightly smaller on the new one because the rest of the face has grown.
Yeah.
Because the car's 2 inches wider, it's taller. Yeah. So proportionally, it looks a little bit smaller.
Smaller. It's smaller, but it's still the creep. It's the creep over the top.
Yeah.
Like you can see that line that goes from the top of the top of the lights.
Yeah.
And so it comes all the way across. So they have this one continuous line that sort of goes across. And at that point, there's like a little, there's a kink or a little angle in the grill.
Chamfer.
Yeah, and it looks, and at that point, it looks like it's creeping onto the hood, and then eventually, at some point while you're driving, it'll just get you while you're, it'll work its way all the way up to the hood, and then reach into the car and get you.
Yeah. The other big change, on this new one is the front lighting. You know, they've gone from the traditional pair, horizontal pairs of lights on either side, so four lights, to this split lighting configuration where they've got the daytime running lights, LED daytime running lights, in a slim horizontal strip up above, and then the headlights in another strip down below. So you've got these two parallel lighting elements. This is going to be a signature look for all the high-end luxury BMWs. So they put this on the new 7. It's on the new X7, the refreshed X7, and also the XM. They're the only ones that are going to get this look. All the other BMWs are going to stick with something closer to what they've had recently. This thing looks imposing, but compared to when I saw it back in April in New York, in this event space where they had the reveal, out in the daylight, it actually looks a lot better. I thought, it looks better balanced, looks better proportioned. It's 5 inches longer than before, a couple inches wider, a couple inches taller. It actually doesn't look bad, especially from the profile and the rear three quarters. And I can learn to tolerate the grill.
If you can get black on black on black, it looks like you're from the future.
I think you actually can.
Yeah, and if you're from the future and you're here to solve crimes, that's what it looks like. Yeah, you're like, I'm from the future, I'm here to solve some future crimes.
Yeah. I think you actually can get that combination, because you can get a combination of the black grill, like without the chrome surrounds and other black trim. And then I'm pretty sure you can get that on a black body. The other thing that's cool is they do offer a bunch of two-tone combinations now, where you've got where it's split horizontally, like at the belt line. They had a couple examples of one there that was the lower half was red, this dark, this sort of burgundy red, and then black on top, which was, it was a really cool color combination. I really liked that one. As you approach the car, you realize, one of the options they have on here is automatic doors. So you can press you can either reach in into the cavity there and, pull the door handle the way you normally would, pull it open manually, or you can just press the button there and the door will motor itself out. And you can also activate that from the app or from the key fob. And one of the things they've done is in order to avoid parking lot dings or, hitting somebody's walking by the car, they've put ultrasonic sensors like the ones they have, those little round button sensors that they have in the bumpers for your parking assist. They put one of those in each of the door handles to detect if there's some obstruction there. And so the door will start opening up and it detects something and it'll stop. So it won't ding the car parked next to you. Unfortunately, it can't stop the car parked next to you from dinging your doors. This is one of those things that, it's kind of a cool feature, but not really necessary.
The very high end of the Bentleys and the Rolls Royces, they have this type of thing. It's like, at some point you're like, well, what are we going to add to this to make it even more luxurious? How are we going to justify people paying a lot of money? Or not even justify, it's just that people want something extra from their car.
Yeah.
And they're like, look at this. It's a lot of the sort of like, hey, you have a friend come over. Hey, look at this. I don't know how helpful it'll be. And I think a lot of people are going to be pushing that button, that ultrasonic sensor, thinking it's a button to open the valve. They're like, oh, I just pushed this button. They're like, no, you're sort of blocking a sensor, actually. But yeah,
there's a lot extra about this car.
Yeah, you gotta, because especially when you're like, okay, what are we gonna do up against what Mercedes is showing off with the S and the
They don't, BMW hasn't done the hyperscreen approach of Mercedes, but they do have a very large curved display with a 12-inch cluster display right in front of you, 15-inch touchscreen display in the middle for the infotainment. One of the things in the latest version of the iDrive software, on the left-hand bar, on the touchscreen, one of the things is four little boxes, that's the app drawer, And you tap on that and you see all the functions that are in all the different things that are in this thing. It's like, it's really quite overwhelming. There's a lot there. Yeah, this thing.
Stuff. Here's the stuff. Yeah, Here's all the stuff.
This thing has some serious creeping featureitis. Yeah. Fortunately, instead of searching through all this, scrolling up and down, trying to find what you're looking for while you're driving, you can actually do pretty much everything in there using voice controls. And it works pretty well. Like, you can get in and say, hey, BMW, crack the windows open. And it'll drop the windows down an inch or two. Open the driver's side window. So you don't have to go looking for where is the button for that.
Or I do and accidentally roll down the rear driver's, the passenger side window when I'm looking, trying to adjust the regular passenger. Yeah. I'm like, I'm looking over. I'm like, what's going on? And I'll say.
Yeah. So you can do things like there's in the ones we drove, they all came equipped with the optional 31-inch theater screen in the back.
Oh, the rearview mirror blocker.
Exactly. Yes. So it's a 31:9 aspect ratio. So it's really like ultra wide screen.
Panavision.
Which is, or 32:9. It's 32:9. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, you can watch Panavision stuff, without any letterboxing.
We're all watching
pretty much
Lawrence
everything
of Arabia.
Else is going to be letterboxed, or you can also set it to, fill the width and then it'll crop the top and bottom. Which
don't do that.
No, don't do that.
Don't ever do that.
Unfortunately, what you can't do is like what Honda had a few years back in the Odyssey. They had a widescreen rear seat infotainment system that popped down from the roof, and you could actually have do a split screen and have the rear seat passengers or second row passengers could be watching two different things on halves of the screen. You can't do that, unfortunately.
Oh, that's a bummer.
But one of my friends that was at the event was talking to somebody from BMW and found out, because right now, they don't offer a digital camera mirror system in there, because when you put that the screen down, you can't see anything from the rearview mirror inside the car. Yeah. It's
like
it's completely blocked.
Like driving a cargo van at this point.
Yeah, but they will sometime next year. They will start offering the digital camera mirror system bundled with the theater screen. And then when you put down the theater screen, blinds come up in the rear door windows and in the back window. And the one in the back window is actually opaque. The ones in the side windows are the perforated ones that you can see through. And you can put all that stuff up and down with voice. You can say, hey, BMW, open the sun blinds or close the sun blinds. But it's not a fully natural language voice record system. So you have to say some things in a specific way. So it doesn't understand sun shades, but sun blinds, it's good with.
They got to do some more. They got to do some more regionalization on that.
Yeah, they got a little more work to do there.
Yeah.
Once you figure out that you can do most of the stuff with voice, it's not as daunting to try to find stuff. This is a big car. Driving it. It feels relatively imposing, but fortunately it does have four-wheel steering, which helps with maneuverability.
What's the rear turn degrees?
3.5 degrees.
3.5, all right.
I think the Mercedes is what, 10 degrees?
10 degrees standard. In the United States, it's standard 10 degrees because it was 4.5 and then 4.5 and then you could upgrade to 10, but then they're like at the last minute, like, you know what? You just all get 10 degrees. I think it was just easier to build it.
Yeah, so this one's 3.5, which is not as much, but it's still it helps. When you got a 126-inch wheelbase, every little bit helps.
Yeah, well, you got to make sure those people in the back seat are comfy. You need big wheelbase for the comfy people watching all the movies while you're driving them around. You're going to be picking up and driving your friends, and they're going to want to watch like The Matrix, and you're just sitting in the front like an idiot. You're like, what's Neo doing now?
And this one is. There's only one wheelbase length. They said that BMW told us that something like over 90% of customers bought the extended wheelbase on the old one, and so they said, forget it. Just do the extended wheelbase as the only version now.
Yeah, there's no point.
Yeah. So like I said, we got to drive both the 760 and the i7. And for the most part, the performance is actually pretty similar. They have the same same peak horsepower, 536. The i7's got a little more peak torque. The 760 is about 600 pounds lighter. It's about 5,300 pounds versus 59 for the i7. Mm-hmm. In most driving conditions, you really won't notice much of a difference in performance. They both accelerate pretty similarly. Once you get up to higher speeds, this is a purely hypothetical. I mean, we would never do anything like, test, speeds of 80 plus miles an hour to triple digit speeds on public roads. But it's been said that, above about 85 miles an hour, the performance of the i7 starts to fall off a little bit compared to the 760. The 760 really starts to pull. Chubba and I would never evaluate anything like that.
Outside of Germany. If you're on the Autobahn, you're more, 85 miles an hour is nothing.
Yeah. For the most part, the way most people are going to use a car like this, it's great. The ride quality. I mean, all the new sevens have standard four-wheel air spring suspension with auto leveling. Especially in the i7, it's really quiet, and very, very smooth. It's like pretty much anything you do, driving down the highway, going up, up a twisty mountain road, in near Palm Springs, anywhere you're driving it, it feels like it's gliding along. It doesn't feel like it's floating, so it's not like an old style American Cadillac or something.
A bump and you're like a land yacht. 5 miles.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really well controlled. So it feels like you're gliding over the road and it just goes where you point it, which was really impressive for something that weighs 3 tons. It's surprisingly fun to drive, given its size. Doesn't have a whole lot of steering feedback, switching it to sport mode basically just makes the steering heavier, but doesn't really give you any real feedback.
Just add a little bit more torque to the steering.
Yeah.
It's the 7 series. You're not bombing back roads with the 7 series. You're cruising, you're cruising back roads with your friends and trying to make them sick while they're watching, Lawrence of Arabia or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Panavision. <Yes.
laughs> I forgot to mention the theater screen system does come with Amazon Fire TV built in, and you've got 5G modem in the car.
Oh, cool.
So you can stream all, whatever pretty much you can get all of the different streaming services as channels through Amazon. So if you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, you can use that. And who isn't an Amazon Prime subscriber these days? You can watch everything in the back seat there. One of the neat little design details is, a lot of cars have ambient lighting. BMW has got these light strips that run along the dash and into the door panels that look like they're faceted, like a jewel. And then you've got the LED light strips behind there. You can pick different themes from the touchscreen system or select them by voice, get different colors. And it actually looks really cool, especially at night. It's a neat effect. It's what you would expect of, $100,000 plus luxury car. Like I said, once you get past, all of the features and you figure out how to do it with voice, for the rest of it works really well. The EPA range numbers for the i7 just came out. The base version has 19-inch wheels. That's got the longest range, 318 miles, 89 mpge, which, for a 3-ton luxury car is not bad.
89 miles per gallon equivalent.
Yeah. Yeah. So 318 miles range. And, as we've seen from other BMW EVs, they're pretty good. Their numbers tend to be fairly conservative and you know, they generally will match or exceed their label numbers. So you shouldn't have much problem. If you go for the 20-inch wheels, you get 296 miles of range. And oddly, the 21-inch wheels, and I'm guessing this probably has something to do with the tires that are on there, you get 308 miles of range. I would have typically, the biggest wheels would give you the lowest range, but 308 miles. So anywhere.
What did the 21-inch look like? Do they are they specifically designed to sort of to reduce that wheel turbulence?
They all are designed to minimize the turbulence. They're trying to minimize the drag. And the whole body shape is also designed to minimize drag. Even the 21s are designed for low drag. So that helps.
Maybe they just did a little extra something on the 21s to sort of help. And then they're like, oh, hey, it actually worked out. Whoops, don't get the 20s.
Yeah. And then the 760s, let's see, the 740 is going to be rated at 27 miles per gallon combined. Which is not bad.
Bad.
That thing's got about 400 horsepower.
The inline six, man, that's such a great engine.
Yeah. It is the pretty much the ideal form factor for an internal combustion engine, piston engine. And then the 760 is rated at 21 miles per gallon combined, which, again, for a 5,300 pound car with 560 horsepower, that's not too shabby.
Yeah. And that's a lot. And that little drag coefficient because they're making the i7 as well.
Yeah, and then the i7 has a starting MSRP of $119,300, 0 to 60 in 4.5 seconds. The 740 starts at $93,300. It's 375 horsepower. It's certainly competitive price wise, size wise, range, is not as good as what you're going to get from the high, from the maximum range versions of a Tesla Model S. But this is a much more luxurious car than what you're going to get from Tesla. Yeah. And I can't remember what's the range on an EQS?
Oh, geez. I have an EQE in my driveway, and someone asked me the range. I'm like, I can't remember.
Oh, okay. Well, the Lucid Air, is, 400 to 500 miles of range. Those right now, for now at least, are still starting, in the $154,000 range and up.
Yeah, 350 for the EQS.
Yeah, so not quite as much as an EQS, still enough for what almost anybody's going to need, and these charge pretty fast. You can add 80 miles of range in 10 minutes at 190 kilowatts. It'll put the miles back on fairly quickly. And, after 300 miles, you're going to want a bio brake anyway. You've got massaging seats with all kinds of patterns and things like that. So lots of stuff in here.
Getting all the, you're sort of,
All right. Next up, tell us about Honda and solid state batteries.
Oh, so I went to Japan and I spoke with the CEO of Honda and the head of their global electrification. These are two different people. Their global electrification. The CEO is Toshihiro Mibe, and the head of the global level electrification is Shinji Aoyama. And I spoke to both of them, and then I went and saw them. They have an R&D center. And they showed us how they were making, or at least they're starting to make, their solid-state batteries. And the issue with solid-state batteries is that because of the way they work, without getting super crazy technical, is that the way they work is that what happens is is that you end up with these little spikes inside the batteries, these little pieces that stick out. They're called dendrites, and they create short circuits inside the batteries. And what that does is it lowers the lifespan of the battery. So instead of, you know, like a regular car, you get thousands of charge and discharge cycles. With these, you get a couple, you know, hundreds instead, which is not something you want in a car because you're like, well, I had the car for a year and now the battery's totally shot. So in order to reduce those dendrites, what they've done is they've stuck in the lithium ion, God dang it, the thing in the middle.
The separator? Electrolyte?
The electrolyte. So it's the electrolyte that creates these dendrites because you're going back and forth between the anode and the diode. And what happens is that's where you get the dendrites. So what Honda is doing is they're putting a polymer fabric, essentially a coating on each side of that, and to reduce the dendrites, the little spikes. In order to make sure that it's uniform and it's high pressure and smashed together, is they're using rolling. Instead of using a press, they're rolling these out. And in theory, it sounds like a good idea. It sounds like it might work because you're essentially putting like a little net that says, hey, you can't do this anymore. There's nowhere for you to go. Keep doing your job. We're going to keep you trapped in this little area. So they have this system that they're working on right now, and in 2024 they're going to have a pilot manufacturing line. So in 2024 they'll have a line in Japan where they'll actually be building solid state batteries, and they believe that they'll have a solid state battery powered vehicle by the end of this decade, like 2029 is what they were saying. So from, let's say, a little over a year ago, where you're just like, what is Honda doing with EVs? Because they had the Honda E, which never came to the United States for various reasons. And then the Clarity, which they had just killed because they brought the Clarity over, which had like essentially the same range as the Honda E, not nearly as compelling of a vehicle. And no one was buying it, the EV version, so they just killed it. So they only had one EV in the United States, and they're like, no, no one's buying it. We're getting rid of it. So you're just like, well, what is Honda doing? And then we have, Mibe. He came on board, and he's like, okay, we gotta get it together. And I think this new leadership over at Honda really understands that the future is electric. You can't sit there and complain about it like another Japanese automaker. Complaining and saying, oh, regulation, you can't be Toyota is essentially what's going on. And I mean, Toyota's coming around. But they, when you have it from the top down saying, we need to electrify and we need to move quick and we need to figure out how to do this and we need to do it right. And so it's interesting because, at the same time, they're also working with GM. They're using the Ultium platform for the Prologue. And then they have this whole other division or other company, Sony Honda Mobility, which they're working with Sony because they were looking for a partner who wasn't in the automotive space to come up with some new ideas to sort of like shake things up. And so Sony ended up being that company, and Sony had a few years earlier shown off a car at CES, like their surprise EV at CES, where they couldn't tell you if they were making it or not for like 2 years. And I Sony Honda Mobility. Yeah, so they were looking for another company that wasn't in the automotive space to work with to create something that was, I guess they were saying, thinking out of the box. And Sony had shown off that car, which no one had expected. And I had talked to Sony, and then they showed it off again. And I talked to Sony 1 week, and I'm like, are you guys building this? And they're like, nah, probably not. And then the next week they talked to Motor Trend, and they're like, yeah, we're totally going to build it. Or is the other way? I don't even remember. Maybe they told me.
Back in 2020 at CES, when they showed off the first one, the sedan, I think the indications they were given at that time was, we built this to showcase all of the different kinds of components and sensors and electronics that we can do, and they weren't, they didn't really give any indication that they were actually going to build a vehicle.
Yeah, but then they showed it again, and they kept showing, it's testing, it's doing this. And I don't remember if they told me.
They did a second concept this year, a crossover.
Yeah, Yeah, so they I don't remember I don't know if they told me they were going to build it or they weren't going to build it, but they told Motor Trend the exact opposite like a week and a half later. So I'm that car and driver. I'm talking to somebody. I'm getting like dispatches from Japan. I'm like, okay, I got this article. I write it up, put it out. And then like a week and a half later, Motor Trend has an article and it's the same thing except completely opposite answers. I'm like, what is happening? Well, anyway, so now Sony is working with Honda. So they have that. So they have a bunch of, and you know, we asked them, you have all these different things going on. Why? Like, and essentially their answer was, it's still really early days for electrification, and essentially they don't want to put all their eggs in one basket is what it comes down to. They want to have multiple paths to electrification to say, you know, if this one doesn't work, we have these other two things that are going on, mm-hmm. which is, you know, sort of, you know, it's smart. It's like if you're looking for a job, you don't just apply for one job and just hope for the best. You apply to a lot of jobs. You throw your net, you have to throw a wide net out there. So that's what Honda's essentially throwing a wide net into electrification. And I think at this point, I think, you know, that's a smart decision because, you know, solid state doesn't work out, which for, you know, almost two decades, it hasn't worked out.
Yeah.
It's always 5 years away. It'll be
it's
nice.
Like fuel cells and you know, all kinds of other stuff.
So, yeah. So it was a good chat. It was a good tour. They let us go into the room. We had to wear all the stuff, you know, we had to wear bunny suits and gloves and special shoes and all that stuff in order to watch them build. And it was, you know, it's always fun. You know, people talk about what they're doing, but to actually see it and know that they're actually working on it and know that they have a plan for a pilot site for manufacturing. That's the big thing. Is like we're working on this. I'm like, okay, well, can we see it? You know, we're working on it. And then for them, like, here, we're going to show it to you. And we're already planning to tool a site just to build these batteries. So it's a level of commitment that you kind of want to see from an automaker who is trying to crack the solid state code. And when we asked them about like, well, what are you going to share it with GM? And essentially the answer was, we're happy to sell this to anyone. Like if they crack the code,
they'll license it to whoever.
Yes,
wants
they will. They will sell it to anyone who will buy it. And I think anyone who gets that solid state thing figured out is going to be. They're going to make a. That's going to be a big deal if you get it figured out and you can prove that it'll last. You know, the same amount of charge cycles as a regular lithium ion battery. That company's going to make a lot of money selling licensing that out to other automakers.
Yeah. Do they plan to manufacture these themselves at some point, or are they going to partner with, like, you know, they recently announced a joint venture with LG to build a cell plant in Ohio near where a bunch of their assembly plants are. You know, are they planning to go down a similar path and, you know, partner with a cell manufacturer to do that, or are they just going to go all in-house and do that?
They're doing everything in-house right now. All the research, all the development, everything they're doing on their own right now. In the future, though, you know, they'll be able. It's like an iPhone. You know, Apple does everything in-house, and then when it comes to actually building it, they'll probably, you know, they have a partner that'll do it. I think Honda's gonna, you know, partner with LG Chem or somebody in order to actually to do the, you know, the huge manufacturing, so they don't have to. But right now everything they're doing, yeah. Because I was like, well, are you working with partners right now? They're like, no, this is all us. They want all the money.
Fair enough.
And, you know, yeah.
I mean, if you're going to be late, you know, if you've got something that might be, you know, a breakthrough, you know, you probably want to leverage the most you can out of it.
Yeah, well. Yeah. So it was you know, because, you know, we the Honda didn't come here, and that could have been a halo vehicle for them here. And the Clarity just didn't stick. And then you just got nothing for forever. You're just like, well, what is Honda doing? Yeah. And,
I mean, you know, to be fair, the Clarity EV was not very good. I mean, it only had like 84 miles.
Yeah. It didn't have the idea with the Clarity was that the interior was really nice. It was almost mm-hmm. Acura level. So instead of range, you got like a really nice interior. Which people kind of didn't really, you know, you're like, okay, I understand the pitch, but But I don't think people want, especially at that point, because it was only first adopters, and first adopters would have rather had range instead of a nice interior, because if they cared about nice interiors, they wouldn't have been buying Teslas.
Right. I mean, that's, and, you know, I mean, the argument that, that Honda made with the, you know, with having such a small battery in there was that, well, we're going for maximum efficiency. You know, we wanted to, you know, you go with a smaller, lighter battery. Yeah, and the same is true for, you know, for Mazda and others. You know, Hyundai did the same thing with the original Ioniq. You know, if we go with a smaller, lighter battery, you know, we can get more miles per kilowatt hour out of it because the car is not so heavy. But I think in the case of, you know, this one, they went too far with it.
Yeah. And they, you know, you tell the people, that's hard to explain to somebody who's looking at a car and they're like, well, I can get a Tesla that gets 250 miles or I can get this car that gets 89. And like, yeah, but it's more efficient. I'm like, they don't care because more efficient doesn't get you to work and back.
Exactly.
More efficient doesn't help you. And, you know, and obviously batteries and vehicles have gotten more efficient over time. But at that point, like even if it was inefficient for that time, you could have gotten, you know, if you work 30 miles away, that's 60 miles with an 89, you know, if you have an 89 mile range vehicle, you're like, you're kind of pushing it. You're like, oh man, that's too much.
And on top of all that, it was kind of homely.
It wasn't a pretty car. It was really nice inside. It was comfortable.
Yeah, no, I mean, I drove both the plug-in hybrid and the fuel cell versions. And, you know, it was a nice interior. It was, you know, very Acura-like. But, yeah, it was kind of ugly on the outside.
It was a hard sell. Especially, and then they came out with the Honda E, and they were like, well, why don't we get that? Because it has a little bit more range. But it's also, it's like, it would have been like,
it's fun.
Yeah, it's like the Mini SE. The Mini SE, on, you know, I think my range test was 120 miles with that thing.
Yeah.
Which is fine for most of your sort of cruising around town, but it was also super fun to drive.
Yeah.
And you really liked being in that car. And I think the clarity, you're like, well, it drives. And I hope no one sees me.
All right. Let's do one more story and then answer a few listener questions. Mini USA. Just as, you know, manuals are disappearing, everybody's, and this is particularly amusing since Mini has said that, you know, they're going all electric going forward. You know, all their upcoming models are going to be electric, which means they almost certainly won't have manual transmissions, but Mini USA is launching a manual driving school at the BMW Performance Center in Thermal, California, at the Thermal Raceway. I mean, I'm glad to see Mini promoting manuals, but, you know, a little late.
They're going electric before the rest of BMW. They're like the first ones.
Yeah.
But they're the only are they the only BMWs you can get with in the United States? You can get with a manual transmission.
That's it.
No,
you can. The new M2 is going to be available with a manual, I think.
Oh, because the 2 Series doesn't have a manual, but the M2 will.
I think the M2 is going to be available with a manual. And I think the M3, M4 are available with a manual. Maybe not.
All right.
I could be wrong.
So it kind of makes sense. If you're one of those people who want to join that enthusiast and you're still staying within the family.
Yeah. And, you know, BMW did recently announce that they're going to offer, you know, some Mini models that haven't offered a manual for the last couple of model years. Starting this month. November, they're going to start offering the manuals again in some of those models. There will be a bunch of Minis with manuals available, at least for a few more years yet.
All right.
So, you know, if you don't know how to drive a manual, just go take the course. Just learn how to drive a manual just for the fun of it.
It's okay. So taking a course from someone else, removes a lot of anxiety.
Yes.
And issues you're going to have from learning from your partner or your parent or your friend or your cousin or just someone you know.
And as a parent of 2 kids, trust me, there is a lot of anxiety.
Yeah, because now you're like, ah. So it's going to remove that. Also, it's not your car that you're destroying the clutch on.
Excellent point.
You're destroying someone else's clutch.
Yes.
So if you're a parent and you have a kid, and you can afford, I'm sure this is going to be very expensive, but if you can afford it and you have, let's say you buy the new M2 with the manual transmission, maybe teaching your kid to drive on that is a bad idea because they're going to melt the clutch.
Yes.
So yeah, it's, I think it's, you know, it's a good thing. A little side story from Honda. Someone asked about, manual transmissions on electric vehicles, and, Aoyama, their lead electrification. He's like, we've researched it. It can be done. We're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Because it's fake. He's like, it's fake.
Yeah.
It's not real. It's fake. We're not going to do fake manual transmissions on our cars. So electric vehicles, because, I mean, right now there's a 2-speed in the Porsche and the e-tron, and that's pretty much all you need. Mm-hmm.
So, and that's only on the rear axle.
Yeah. And so Honda could do it. They're not going to do it because it doesn't make any sense. It's fake. Yeah. And he's like, it's fake. It's artificial. It doesn't make any sense. It's not a thing we're going to do. So,
all right, let's answer some questions. Eddie Moreno asks, don't want to start a rift between you and Robbie, referring to me, I'm assuming, but I'm in the market for either the 2022 Subaru BRZ or the 2022 Mazda MX-5 Miata. Compare and advise. Thank you.
Okay. First of all, how tall is Eddie?
Response on Twitter.
Where does Eddie live? If Eddie is taller than 6 foot and he lives somewhere where it rains sometimes, I'm going to say get the BRZ. If Eddie is 6 foot or shorter, and he's somewhere where it's just nice and sunny a lot of the time, definitely get the Miata.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you're under 6 foot and you only plan to drive it, you know, in warm weather months, like I do with mine, Miata is a great choice. So really, you know, for the most part, it comes down to, you know, if you want the sunshine and how tall you are.
Yeah.
Both of them are great cars. Both of them are going to be a blast to drive. The BRZ's got a little more power, and it has that the package shelf with the 2 seat belts, you know, so you can stick your dog back there if you want to, and as well as taking your friend or partner with you. You don't have that option in the Miata, just the 2 seats alone. And I think pricing is similar range for the two.
The BRZ starts at 30. But you have to be careful with the BRZ right now because the markups right now on those things are like around $13,000 to $15,000 for a $30,000 car.
Yeah. Do not pay those kind of markups.
It's not worth it. I'm sure it's going to be just as bad for the Miata, to be honest.
Yeah.
Maybe a little less because I don't think it's as new as the BRZ.
Yeah.
They're just trying to get you.
Yep. All right. Got a couple of questions from Surtur. First, is there a standard way of testing the health of EV batteries, similar to a compression test for an ICE? So there are standards in development for this, industry standards, but there isn't currently a standard. And the context of this question, I think, is probably around buying a used EV. And this kind of relates to another question that we also had from Coach Cabrera. Any reservations about buying a used EV, one that's 2 to 3 years old and has 40 to 60,000 miles on it? Cox Automotive, which owns a lot of different businesses. They own KBB and Auto Trader and other stuff, but they also own a lot of businesses that are related to automotive retail. So they do a lot of stuff with dealers. They have dealer management systems. And one of the businesses they own is Manheim Auctions. So a lot of the used cars that get traded in or come in off of lease end up going to Manheim, and they get auctioned off, and dealers buy them for their used car inventory. Last year, Manheim bought a company called Spires New Technologies, which, among other things, you know, they're in the business of recycling lithium-ion batteries. But one of the things that they had done is they had also developed testing procedures for lithium-ion batteries. And what Cox and Manheim are doing now is any used EVs that come through their auction system, they're running through this battery of tests, and they generate a battery health report. So if you buy a used EV that came through Manheim, you know, one of the things you'll have is this battery health report. You know, most EVs, you know, there is some, it's not usually, I think, user accessible in the interface, but, you know, there's information stored in the battery management system about the capacity of the battery. It, you know, can be accessed if you go to a dealer or a service center, and it can tell you the state of the battery. So, you know, in general, there's not, you know, a real, a standard right now, but we're getting there. We will have something in the next couple of years, but the Mannheim stuff that they're doing is probably the best right now. So if you buy a used car from a dealer, you know, and it's gone through Mannheim, they should be able to provide you with that battery health report. And then, you know, in general, you know, if you're talking about a 2 to 3 year old used car with 40 to 60,000 miles on it, the battery's probably going to be fine. The only exception might be a Nissan Leaf that has been driven, yeah, you know, in Phoenix for its entire history and, you know, been in 115, 120 degree temperatures because the Leaf still has an air-cooled battery. But everything else, you'll probably be fine.
Yeah, there's a picture of you.
Oh, yeah?
In this article about how the batteries were better than, they were scoring better than the EVs score well on Mannheim battery tests. And then I'm like scrolling through it really quick and I'm like, hey, there's Sam.
Yeah, I talked to somebody a couple months ago about this.
I talked to somebody about something. I don't know.
Yeah. I talked to a lot of journalists. So I can't remember who wrote that story. I think it might have been somebody from AP.
Ward's Auto.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The grades are pretty good.
Yeah.
So there you go. They're good, pretty good.
And you know, the other thing is, you know, aside from Teslas, everybody else offers either 8 year, 100,000 mile or 10 year, 100,000 or 150,000 mile warranty on the battery. So anything with 2 to 3 years that's only got 40,000 to 60,000 miles on it, still going to be under warranty for quite a few more years.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could probably do that. You know, I mean, you can probably buy a used EV in that range, you know, and feel pretty comfortable about the condition of the battery. Okay. Surtur's other question had to do with, you know, given that this weekend, as we record tomorrow, we will be setting the clocks back and going back from daylight savings time in the U.S. to standard time. Says, how do I set the clock in my car, or should I just ignore it until March? I don't know about you, but I would just ignore it.
So I have two. We have three vehicles. One of them, it just changes automatically. The Hyundai, it just does it. Easy peasy. The BRZ just has, right next to the little clock, just has two little tiny buttons. One says H and one says M. And you just tap those buttons, and you just keep going until you hit the number. It's like the easiest clock that we have anywhere, house, car, whatever, to set. The Jaguar, it's still from it's still on standard time, and it's also 12 hours off. So right now we're recording, it's now 11 a.m. so it says it's 10 p.m. now in my Jaguar. And I look at it and I'm driving, I look at it and I'm like, I'll just wait. And yeah. I waited until and tomorrow it'll be fine.
Yeah.
It'll still be 12 hours off, but at the time the number will be correct.
And if you have a newer car that's got Apple CarPlay or Android Auto, that interface is going to show the time from your phone anyway. So just ignore the built-in clock in the car.
Yeah.
Finally, Adam J. asks, curious what you all think of this interview with Tesla's former autopilot, an FSD guy, referring to Andrei Karpathy, who a few months ago left Tesla. But he was their head of AI and led the autopilot and full self-driving program. His justifications for no radar or sensors in their cars. So this was a Forbes article written by Brad Templeton. Brad's a very smart guy. And I think, you know, what Brad said in there, I pretty much agree with. You know, I think Karpathy's arguments for this are nonsense. For not using anything but cameras.
It's going to be harder. I'm like, well, sensor fusion has been around for a long time, and my phone can do it, and cars have been doing it, and other cars are doing it. Don't pretend like it's harder. Well, do better. How about that?
Yeah. You know, it's okay. So, you know, fusing camera, radar, and LiDAR signals together to create one environment model. Yes, that's a little more difficult, but it also gives you a much more reliable view of what's around you. Whereas having just cameras, especially the way Tesla's got theirs configured, is not so good. You know, it because you can't accurately measure distance. You know, it's a lot harder to measure the trajectory of where other vehicles are going. Under a lot of lighting conditions, they don't work as great. It's a simpler system, but it's ultimately going to be much more limited in what it can do. If you actually wanted a proper, true self-driving system that is reliable and robust, do it the right way. Don't take shortcuts.
Yeah. And you have redundancy. It drives me nuts that, Tesla had a computer day. I forget what it was, an AI day. I don't know. Investor day.
Yeah.
I forget what they call it. Every time it's a different name. But they talked about how they had all these redundancies in their hardware, their computer hardware. They're like, oh, we have redundancy for this, and we have redundancy for that, and we have redundancy for this. And they redundancy. They just kept hammering redundancy. But they don't have redundancy when it comes to the sensors that actually see the road. And that's what you have when you have radar, LiDAR, and cameras, is that you have redundancy. So when one fails or it's difficult for one to see because of whatever reason, the other two can pick it up, can come in and help. And the idea is like, well, we have redundancy except for this one thing.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that... Oh, man. Come on, guys.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. Actually, that reminds me of one thing I forgot to mention about the 7 Series earlier. This is the first BMW that actually has hands-free driving capability with their Drive Assistant Plus
system. Wait, so is the hands-free above 40?
Yeah.
Okay.
Previously they had hands-free below 40 miles an hour.
440,
like
yeah.
Traffic Jam Pilot.
Yeah.
But now it can do hands-free up to whatever speed.
Like Super Cruise and
yeah,
it's like more Super like Cruise Super Cruise. There we go.
Yeah, so it's geofenced to highways, and they have a new camera configuration. They've gone from a trifocal front camera system to a 2 camera system, but the long range camera is an 8 megapixel camera now, which has a lot more resolution than the 1.3 megapixel cameras they used previously and that Tesla still uses. And then they've also got a bunch of 5 radars around the perimeter as well.
See? Redundancy.
Yep. And next year they plan to launch an L3 system with LiDAR, but only in Germany and Japan. There are no plans right now to bring that to the U.S. market.
Mercedes is trying to bring theirs to the market, and they're talking to California and Nevada, and you're just like, okay, well, it works here, but now we're going to turn it off if you drive to Arizona, and you have to do... Hats off to Mercedes for doing the work to bring that here, it just seems like a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah. It's going to have, limited usefulness, up to 37 miles an hour.
You're just like, I'm stuck in traffic, so I can, like, if you live in L.A., it's perfect. If you're stuck, if you live in somewhere where just traffic is just trash, then it's outstanding. If you live anywhere else, you're just like, oh, okay.
Yep. All right. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% Lean Ground Sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.